Bismillah, wa salatu wa salam, ala Rasulullah Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. As I mentioned, for the past few months, I was working on a podcast show, audio podcast. Maybe in the future, we would do videos, inshallah. The podcast, of course, is behind schedule. I was planning on dropping my first podcast last month, but Qadr Allah Mashafat, everything that happens, happen from the decree of Allah. So I decided to put this message out there, my first podcast, freestyle, fresh off from the head, from the heart, from the dome. I'm the type that when I try to, you know, plan like a certain topic or a certain message, I would think about it too much and I would continue to delay. I work best with just opening up my mouth and start speaking from my heart, what comes to my mind. So I decided to just make a podcast and pretty much touch up on some of the things that I will be delivering in the podcast show, you know, such as entrepreneurship, my upbringing, my days in the music industry, growing up Irvington, New Jersey, moving to Atlanta, moving to Los Angeles, just based around my life and my stories. So I want the podcast to be based on my life and around my stories and the ups and downs that I went through in life. And I think when you give people a raw message, they can relate to it better than trying to be too careful. You understand? So I decided to make my podcast show. I want it to be raw. You know what I mean? Of course, within the guidelines that the religion of Islam allows me to speak about and things like that. But I want it to be raw. I want people to know the experiences that I went through. So when I talk about entrepreneurship, for example, which is going to be a topic that I'm going to speak about a lot, inshallah, because as an entrepreneur, you know, many of the times when people make it, starting their businesses off and becoming successful, people don't really see the struggles that they went through. You know what I mean? It's rare that a person can start a business without having any obstacles in his way. You understand? So when you hear somebody talk about entrepreneurship, and I'm not talking about the ones who had a great start or the ones who had a big start, who probably come from money, who family probably gave them money and they was able to start their business. Hats off to them, respect to them as well. But when we talk about entrepreneurship, we talk about those who made it from the bottom and became successful by Allah's permission. You understand? So the struggles are there. Myself coming from New Jersey, growing up without a mother and father, I never had anyone besides my grandparents and my uncles and my aunts who did a good job. They were all working class citizens. You know what I mean? I never really had anyone that I can look up to in my neighborhood that was successful business people, other than drug dealers, unfortunately, other than the people in my neighborhood who was hustling, who was selling drugs. You understand? So I always wanted to take another route, even when I got into the music industry. For example, if people know anything about the music industry, when an artist signs a record deal, they get an advancement. Meaning, for example, we sign a record deal. Let's say, for example, we sign a record deal with a company and the record deal is $500,000, for example. We might split the $150,000 to go as an advancement to our pockets. The remaining money we would use for studio time, the remaining money might have to go for video shoots and things like that. So I was the type of person, whenever I got an advancement, I always look at it as a loan. Because in the music industry, a lot of artists didn't know that when they got their money, the first thing they like to do is go run out and buy jewelry. But they didn't realize that this was a loan. You understand that they got to pay this back to the record company. So I always knew from the beginning that these advancements are not my money. You know, these advancements have to be paid back. The monies that they give you up front have to be paid back with so much interest on it. And this is why a lot of people in the music industry, when people ask me, should I get into the music industry? I keep it real. I say, man, you got a better chance being successful doing something else, going to school, getting a job, getting an education, getting a degree, and maybe starting your own business. The music industry is one of the most corrupt businesses that I ever endured, man, that I ever went through, that I ever witnessed, you know what I mean? So, for example, I would take this advancement that the record companies would give me up front, and I would take that money and I would start a business. So when I was in the music industry, I was dealing with, I had barbershops with my brother. I had salons. I had real estate. When I was maybe 17, 18 years old, one of the first things I'd done with my money, I remember I went and bought vending machines that sell sodas and snacks and drinks. I was buying vending machines and I was putting them in apartment buildings across Los Angeles. That was one of the first businesses that I ever got involved in. So I would buy these vending machines. I think I started off with maybe 3, 4, 5 or something like that. I would buy these vending machines. I would fill it up with candy, soda, and I would go to somebody or a manager or a friend of mine that I know that might be managing an apartment building. I would say, look, can I put this vending machine in your apartment building? I would give you this amount of money off a percentage. So that went for some years. And that was my first experience besides the music industry or besides the street life that I was able to make some money. So I always had something in me where I wanted to do business. I always wanted to do business. And it's funny, not funny, but a brother told me the other day, a friend of mine, he said that the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, said that the money, the risk, the provisions comes from 70% of tijada, of business, of trading and business. So when I speak about entrepreneurship, man, entrepreneurship ain't gonna be easy. You know, I'm talking about those that came from the bottom and made it. But one of the things that people forget about in business, that sometimes, pretty much majority of the times, your business doesn't become successful overnight. You understand? So when I say to people that I'm an entrepreneur, I don't say it from a standpoint that I'm successfully at a level where I want to be as an entrepreneur, but I feel good and thankful that I didn't give up. Because one of the main things about entrepreneurship is never give up. You understand? So when I got past the vending machines, I continued to do business. You know, we had clothing lines with Outlaw Records. We had our own record label. And these was all steps of grooming me and doing business in the future without me even knowing at that particular time. You know what I mean? So when we started Outlaw Records, for example, this one, they were still selling CDs. We started our own record company. We was getting about, if I'm not mistaken, man, we was getting something crazy, like $10 a record or CD that was sold. Something crazy we was getting. You understand? So when we put out a record independently, we didn't have support of major record labels. When we put out our record independently and we were selling, let's say, 100,000, 200,000 copies, remember, we was getting $10 per every copy that we were selling. So we was doing better than rappers at that particular time that were selling millions. Even though we put out a record with Interscope and Pac, besides being on the Pac records, we put a record out with Interscope and Tupac that sold a million, went over platinum. But the money wasn't the same when you're independent. So these steps and these business moves that I was doing back then was actually part of my journey as an entrepreneur, because we had to learn. You know, this was business. We were 17, 18, 19 years old, 20 years old running a record company. We was running a record company that was bringing in millions of dollars. You understand? We was all sitting back collecting. We was getting whatever we was getting monthly, sharing that, splitting that five people. You know what I mean? Five people every month just splitting and sharing a certain amount of money just to come in our pocket. So it was good while it lasted. So when I realized that the music industry was something that I would not continue to be involved in after I accepted the religion of Islam, I knew that I had to step up my entrepreneurship to a whole nother level. As an entrepreneur, I knew I had to step it up. I knew I had to really grind harder, because now, you know, from a teenager until my young adulthood, the only thing that I knew was music. The only lifestyle that I knew was coming from the ghettos, coming from the hood, getting into the music industry. I didn't know any other life, any corporate life besides the music industry. You understand? And I knew that in order for me to continue a certain, not lifestyle, but continue to provide for myself, that I had to step my grind up. You know what I mean? And I'm not a person, unfortunately, we put out this image to the youngsters that having a job or working is a bad thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Everybody might not be successful as an entrepreneur, especially coming from my hood or coming from the ghettos or coming from the music industry. Unfortunately, if there's a rapper, for example, or a singer who had a career and they don't do well anymore and they got to go get a job, the industry, instead of supporting these people, the industry will clown these people. They would say, look, they fell off once they were selling millions of records. Now they working at McDonald's, for example, or they working at a lawyer office, for example. That's shameful. You know what I mean? I think that's shameful, because if a person is working to provide for himself or his family or herself or her family, that's an honorable thing. You know what I mean? But unfortunately, some of the minds are so twisted that we look down upon people that get up and get a job. So I'm not saying that, you know? So when I left the music industry, I knew I had to grind. And I knew that even if it take me to get a job, I would get a job to provide for myself. I'm not too prideful for that, you know what I mean? That's better than someone running around begging or living off of, you know, people's hands out. So I knew I wanted to step my entrepreneurship up. I had to do it, you know what I mean? I had to step the life of an entrepreneur up to another level. So I started getting involved in clothing line. I started my clothing company. I had a company that I started with a guy called Mizum. And we put it with an Arabic twist, and Mizum mean my inspiration isn't money. And we were selling clothes and it was doing well. And, you know, I didn't see eye to eye with my partner, so we had to go our separate ways. But that was a run that I had in the clothing business that I realized that it was something successful, that I knew I would always come back to the clothing business, and I would talk about that later. But besides having Outlaw Clothing with the Outlaws, that was my first time involved in the clothing business. We had our own clothing line, Outlaw Clothing. So after that clothing business with this brother didn't work out, you know, I took it as a loss, but I said, life goes on, I have to continue. After that, what did I do? I knew someone that was involved in, he was an American, his family was doing gold mining and diamond mining in West Africa. So I went with this individual, I had a meeting with him, and I decided, you know, I left the music industry, I had some money saved, and I decided to invest. I went to two friends of mine, and I said, look here, there's a chance that we can invest in diamonds. Now, when people hear about diamonds, they think that it's a business that you automatically gonna get paid, but they don't know that the diamond business is cutthroat. And I should have known that. You know, one of the things that led up to the murder of my own father, it was the diamond business. My father was into the diamond business back then. He was selling diamonds back then. So when he was 26, 27 years old, my father, he was having any given minute 100,000, 70,000, 200,000 cash in his house. When my father was 25, 24 years old, he bought my grandmother, his mother, a home cash. My father was buying his sisters and them, and relatives and brothers and siblings places to stay, you know what I mean? So my father was a businessman. So I guess, and Allah knows best, it's in my DNA. I got that from my father. You know, my aunt told me that when my father was a young child, he used to gather the kids in the neighborhood when he was about 13, 14 years old. He would gather these young kids in the neighborhood and he would blow up balloons. And he would bring the kids in the basement of his house, my grandmother's house. And he would charge kids in the neighborhood money, a quarter, 25 cents to throw a dart at the balloon. So my aunt was telling me, like, your father was a businessman. He was very clever. He would blow up the balloons. He would own the balloons. He would own the darts. But he would charge these kids in the neighborhood 25 cents to see who can bust the balloon with the dart. So this is what my father was doing. And when he got older, he got involved into the diamond business, which, you know what I mean, it ended. It came to the demise of his life because it was a lot of shadiness that was around that business. But I decided to get involved because I'm like, look, man, I'm out of the music industry. I'm Muslim now. And these people seem legit. They seem trustworthy. So let me give them some money. So me with another friend and two other friends, we collected about $80,000 and gave it to this brother, gave it to this guy. And he went to West Africa. He brought us back some diamonds. However, I don't know exactly how he got them in the States, but he got them to the USA. We looked at the diamonds and we was like, gold mine. You know, we thought that, you know, automatically $80,000 worth of diamonds, we finished. This should give us a couple $100,000 in return. But it didn't work out like that. You know what I mean? It didn't work out that fast. And I mean, not that fast. It didn't work out with that plan. So what happened is the business went down. The business went bad. You know, the diamond industry is another industry that's corrupt. You have one person saying that the diamond is worth this. You have another person that's saying it's worth this. So at the end of the day, we find out that the diamonds that we had pretty much did not value enough to give us profit on our return. So that's when I realized then that the life of an entrepreneur is not just glitter and gold. Even though you might have gold in your hand or you might have diamonds in your hand, it doesn't mean you're going to strike richness overnight. You understand? Because most cases, if you don't know the industry or the business that we're stepping in, it's a chance that we're going to lose. So I didn't know the diamond business. You know, anyone that look at a diamond, the more shiny it look, we believe that's the most value. We don't look at the weight of the diamond, the way it was cut plays a major part in it, the way the different things, different there's different things that comes with the diamond industry that most people don't know from the outside looking in. We believe that if it's glitter, if it's shining, the cut look nice, then it will get us rich, you know what I mean? But that's not necessarily the truth when it comes to the diamond or the jewelry industry. And there's a certain amount of people that control, that monopolize that business, and they don't really like others to enter that business. And that's another thing I noticed. They don't really like outsiders to enter that business. And they would try to do anything and everything in their power to keep you from coming in that business, stepping on their toes. So after we took a loss, you know what I mean, on the diamond industry, it was hectic for me. You know what I mean? It was hectic for me. I went through struggles. You know what I mean? I was sleeping on the floor of my brother's house. I was having people calling me saying, look, man, a football player, NBA player, I forget his name, was starting a record company. And he wanted me to run his record company for him. He offered me, I think, a salary of $100,000 a year, but I shut it down because I didn't want to go backwards. I didn't want to go back to being involved in the music industry. You understand? So, and it was also a time that I was trying to get closer to my creator. I was trying to get closer and learn more about the religion of Islam and practice and implement the religion of Islam in my life. So I didn't want to go back to the music industry. But everybody at that particular time was like, man, you crazy. This guy's offering you this money. You're sleeping on the floor. You don't have anything. But that's when you have to have a spirit of an entrepreneur, where you have to know that inside of you that you're going to get up, you're going to hustle, you're going to grind, and you're going to make it. You understand? So I continue to do different businesses. After that business, you know, I got involved with things from shipping cars to Saudi before I moved to Saudi, helping this individual ship cars in Saudi, and I would just sit back and get a percentage, you know. I noticed that even the Muslims on the East Coast in New Jersey had a certain style of clothing. So I would buy clothes and I would go to the East Coast to events or to talks and I would sell these clothes. I had some, I remember I got some oil that I got from the UAE. And this was a time of my life that really showed me, you know what I mean? I would also say this probably was the best time of my life when I hit rock bottom. I got some oil, which we, you know, you can call perfume or whatever, from the UAE, and I started slanging it at the masjid, and some of them was expensive. And I remember my first $100 that I made back, how good that felt. You know, I went from driving Escalades, Lexus to the masjid to a point where I didn't even have a car anymore, and the people at the masjid seen this. So when I started grinding and I started hustling, I got my first rental car. I remember there was a time in my life that I would not drive a car unless it was to a certain standard or a certain type of car. It had to be an Escalade, Mercedes, BMW, or Lexus. So when I first got my rental car, getting back on my feet, it was a normal car, maybe like a Toyota or something like that. But I felt happy. And I think because I grinded, you know, I think because I hit rock bottom and God was showing me, he humbled me. So when I was coming back up, a car, just to be able to drive around in a car, made me feel thankful. You know what I mean? Just to be able to get my own apartment again. When I first got my own apartment, I didn't have furniture. That I remember I was the most happy person. You know what I mean? So that grind, hitting rock bottom, put something inside of me, but it also made me thankful. I realized that my life, I live majority of my life getting things and accomplishing things in this worldly life, and getting things of luxury and living a luxury life, but I wasn't happy at all, and I wasn't thankful at all. So when I hit rock bottom and I started to grind my way back up, I was thankful for everything that was coming my way. One, because I was working myself. I was slinging and I was selling clothes and wood and oil, and I was doing it myself. So I was putting the work in. So the reward was more pleasing to me, you understand? So when I got my first rental car, I was thankful. I was happy that, wow, I didn't realize the burden of not driving in Los Angeles, for example, because I always had a car. I always had my way. So you can easily get unthankful and be ungrateful. But when you hit rock bottom, you start to be thankful about the things that you didn't even imagine was bringing ease to your life. You understand? So I grinded myself back up. And I continued. I moved to Saudi Arabia almost 8 years ago now. And I always wanted to be in the coffee business. You know, I always wanted to be in the coffee business. For the past 10 years or so, I've been investigating the coffee business. And eventually, I was able to get involved in the coffee business. I started my own coffee brand called MW Cafe, Muta Wasin Cafe. We had a shop in Ras Al Khaimah, UAE. But now we're opening up a shop in Riyadh. We renovating the location as we speak. I got involved in a restaurant called Smoky Beards, which is a Texas-style smoke barbecue restaurant with some of the brothers, Artan, Sonny, Saud, some brothers from Saudi, some brothers from America. We came together, we teamed up, and we opened this restaurant here. I was able to start again my own clothing line called 33 Clothing. So the things that I did in the past that I had love for, like the clothing business and coffee, I'm able to come back to that. You know what I mean? Even though it might be 10 years later, but I never gave up inside of me that hope or that passion to be successful as an entrepreneur and to continue these businesses that I actually enjoy being part of or enjoy doing. You know what I mean? So that's just a little bit of my story, my background on entrepreneurship, and maybe in the future I would touch upon, you know, how I got started with 33, Smoky Beards, MW Cafe. I will go into in-depth, more details, talk about these businesses. So this is the first podcast. Like I said, I just want to do an introduction pretty much, and I'm going to keep dropping them, God willing, inshallah. Peace.